tournament week, everybody. It is the first week of the conference tournament schedules. The WCC tournament is here. Welcome all into the unofficial WCC Hoops podcast. We have a lot to get into. The regular season is done. We are going to be starting the tournament on Thursday. We saw Gonzaga St. Mary's over the weekend. Gonzaga having a dominant week throughout the course of the past like 7 days. We've seen some interesting results as well. Santa Clara and USF kind of they're a little shaky right now, but we'll get into all of that. We'll get into Gonzaga St. Mary's, we'll get into the tournament, we'll get into all that, but we will start with Gonzaga last week, because it's funny, like I was talking with some people, looking around everything, and yes, going into the week, everybody said that that Gonzaga still needed quad one victories to assure themselves a spot in the tournament. And that was really the only thing that you could point to as being a flaw in what Gonzaga has done this year. You could clearly see that they had been playing better over the last month and a half, really since that St. Mary's game, since that Santa Clara game. They've been playing better. They have been improving, it seems, night in, night out. And on Thursday against USF at the Chase Center, that first half was not all that great for Gonzaga. Wasn't the greatest look. USF was hanging around, and they weren't really playing their best either. But that was a one-point game at the half. I was in attendance for that one. I was with a buddy and walked out to grab a beer during halftime. I came back. I missed all of 1 minute, maybe a little 1 minute and change of the start of the second half. I look up and it's now a 10-point game in favor of Gonzaga. And I'm just thinking, what the hell happened? And we know what happened. Gonzaga absolutely blitzed USF there in the second half. They completely dominated everything that we saw in that second half. Graham EK was incredible that night. We saw some great things from Nolan Hickman. Like he had maybe the quietest 22 points I've ever seen, because all of a sudden I look up and it's Nolan Hickman with 19 in that second half. And he was everywhere. And we know, like, that's one of the guys that has been playing better and better and better as this season has gone along, has been Nolan Hickman. The numbers are very clear on that front. You just can see like how much more improved he has been over the course of the season. And it's hard to ignore just how good this Gonzaga team overall has been. And I think it's been lost on the national perspective. I'm still getting that one Athletic article that talks about like more or less the demise of Gonzaga. And it's just kind of shocking to me that that is still being pushed out there when very clearly, and that is no longer the case. I thought that the win against USF kind of nearly solidified their spot in the NCAA tournament, but even I thought that they needed one more to satisfy the committee. And on Saturday, they absolutely got that. They controlled that game against St. Mary's more or less from the beginning. Yes, St. Mary's had an early 12-10 lead, but after that, this was that was a complete dominant performance from Gonzaga. They controlled the pace. They really kept the guys who St. Mary's needed off balance the whole night. Augustus Marshallonis only was able to get up 6 shots. Aiden Mahaney, he had to be a volume shooter in that one. He was 6-for-19 from the floor. They held St. Mary's to 37% from the field. They only let them get to the free throw line 9 times. They turned St. Mary's over way more than we've seen St. Mary's turn it over in the last like 2 months. 13 turnovers for St. Mary's, which led to 13 points off those turnovers. And then Gonzaga also blitzed St. Mary's on the fast break. It was 15, I think it was, ended up being 15-3, but it was 15-0 at one point in that one. And Graham E.K. this past week has shown very clearly that he is the WCC Player of the Year. I was talking with some folks before the game, and some people were still trying to make the case for Marshall Onis, and I'm like, you clearly have not been looking at Graham E.K.'s numbers throughout the course of WCC play and just how much better he has gotten. And yes, Marshall Onis has also been a lot better. Some people tried to point out like his importance to this team, which I think it is a fair thing to point out, but this is a Player of the Year, not an MVP, and those are different qualifiers. Player of the Year is just best player. It is not necessarily the most valuable, even though like you could very well make the case that without Graham E.K., where is Gonzaga right now? And then Ryan Nemhard on Saturday was also so good. He controlled that game from the beginning. 10 assists, 20 points on that night. He's played really well in both games against St. Mary's. Yes, he didn't have the assist total in that first contest, but turned that around in this one. More than made up for that performance. And this was a game in which Nolan Hickman and Anton Watson combined for 6 points. Yes, Nolan Hickman did have 7 assists, so he was contributing in other ways. But this was a Gonzaga game where they had two dominant players play the way they are very much capable of doing, and got complimentary help from everybody else. I don't think Gonzaga played their best game. They played a very good game on Saturday, but I don't even think we've seen the best out of them yet either. What we saw out of St. Mary's was maybe one of their worst performances of the year. They only scored 57 points in this game. Again, talked about Aiden Mahaney becoming a volume shooter. Mitchell Saxon was largely kind of kept off the glass. He only had 5 rebounds. He did have 3 offensive rebounds. But what was interesting is that St. Mary's was still pretty good on the offensive glass, but they just could not take advantage in a way that we're used to seeing them. They had 17 offensive rebounds in the game and only 10 second chance points. So this was a game to an extent you could say like, well, a team like St. Mary's was eventually going to hit a wall. They had won 16 in a row. They were going to lose eventually. And for them, maybe it was better that it happens before Vegas. They still are the one seed for the WCC tournament. They are still the outright champions of the WCC. So they've already checked off a couple of the boxes that they needed to check off. And this was a game that Gonzaga needed to secure an NCAA tournament spot. And the one thing I'll say about that is that I think for a while you could clearly see how good Gonzaga was and that they had been getting better over the last month, which is what we saw last year as well. We were talking I think it was like the first third of conference play after they had lost to LMU, after they had lost to St. Mary's, that, oh, this Gonzaga team might actually not be as good as we thought. And then they got better and really peaked there toward the end of conference play, getting into the NCAA tournament. This is what Gonzaga does. And I know like that's kind of like it's almost cliche at this point because it's been 25 years since the last time we saw an NCAA tournament without Gonzaga in it. And this year is going to be no different. They're going to be in. They absolutely secured it with the St. Mary's win. Now it's really going into the WCC tournament, thinking about seeding and where that's going to land them. A couple of brackets now have moved them all the way up as a 6 seed, which I think is right. I don't think that the WCC tournament is going to move them up that much further. I don't know if they can sneak into the 5 line, but 2 more wins, another win against St. Mary's might be able to do that. For St. Mary's, I think it's like, I think I saw them as a 7 which is about where they were beforehand. Some had them on the sixth line. So them as a seven is probably about right at this stage. Gonzaga being the six, them being the seven. But this Gonzaga team is rolling right now. They've now won, I believe it's eight in a row. Going into Vegas, they'll be the two seed. They will, so they'll likely see USF in that semifinal game. And then if they are able to finish off the deal, they'll see St. Mary's, likely see St. Mary's in that championship game. And then I feel like all bets are off for that one because it'll be one of those, another bragging rights game for these two because they'll both be in. St. Mary's does have the conference championship, but I do wonder, and I think we've seen this in years past, where if a non-Gonzaga player, and same thing for St. Mary's, we've seen this back and forth of like whichever team has the player that doesn't win player of the year, they come out a little chippier. They come out with that mentality that they're going to actually try to like really take it to that team, and that individual player usually comes out pretty strongly as well. So now I think the predicted, I think it's pretty clear who the WCC player of the year should be. It should be Graham EK. We'll see when the WCC releases all the award winners in totality. But I think this past week, if it wasn't clear, it became very clear that it's Graham EK. All right, so for St. Mary's, this is what we also saw in that game against Gonzaga, is a few things. One is putting the pressure on the St. Mary's guards to try to beat you, to try to be the focal point, which, yes, they are. And what Gonzaga did a really good job of was taking them out of their comfort zone. I think they did a really good job of forcing Aiden Mahaney to take tougher shots. They didn't let him really get loose on the three-point line, which I feel like is what really loosens up his ability to get to the basket. He did attack the basket a few times and had mixed results on that front. It really looked like he had a hard time separating from the Gonzaga defenders all night long. That 6-for-19. Kind of highlights that. Marshall Onis, similarly, I felt like he also had a hard time gaining some separation. And that's usually the case. It's not like he's the fastest of the guards, but he also had a hard time just even with his footwork creating that separation that we're used to seeing him have, and that he had even up in Spokane about a month ago. And that put a lot of pressure on, well, everybody else. I mean, again, kind of pointed out the 17 offensive rebounds, which is about what we're used to seeing from, maybe actually even more so what we're used to seeing from the St. Mary's team, but they couldn't cash in. Mitchell Saxon, he was so exhausted by the end of that game because he had to guard Graham EK for most of the night. And then he also had to make sure he avoided foul trouble, which obviously impacts the way you play your defense. Knowing that there was no Harry Wessels for this game, knowing that Josh Jefferson was out for the year, it changes a lot for what the St. Mary's team was capable of doing. And I think I was waiting to see them play Gonzaga again to see what the difference was going to look like. And we saw it. Like, I think it was very obvious what the difference was, that many times while they were out there, Gonzaga got to play 4-on-5 when they were on the defensive end. They did not guard Mason Forbes anywhere outside of the key. They really kind of dared him to shoot, and he didn't, which made what Samers was doing on the offensive end just that much more difficult. I mean, Jefferson had, I think it was 16 and 11 up in Spokane. So, yes, that was a huge factor of what was going on in that game. But that's not going to change for St. Mary's. He's not coming back. There is still an opportunity that Harry Wessels could return. for the WCC tournament, but we'll see. Like, he, on that front, and he is a huge component, I think, to what they're going to, what the game plan will be or what it would look like. Because without him and only Mitchell Saxon there as a true five, St. Mary's gets a lot smaller as a team. And this is not, and Gonzaga, we know, is a team that you have to have size against. You have to be able to match them up on the post because they will just absolutely torch you. This is what we saw. USF had this, had the same problem. A lot of the other WCC teams have the same problem. Those who can't match up for size against Gonzaga is that they will just punish you. And yes, St. Mary's did still have an advantage on the rebounding front, but they had no answer for Graham Ike. And maybe at this point, no one does have an answer for Graham Ike because he's been so good the last month or so. But St. Mary's does have a bit of a problem right now, and it is a depth problem. They are going to be very thin at the on the front line. If Mitchell Saxon gets in any level of foul trouble, like he did against Pepperdine the other night, this is a team that doesn't go, is going to have to play small, and they're going to have to utilize Mason Forbes a lot more. They're going to have to utilize Luke Barrett a lot more than maybe they want to. This is a team that is going to be forced to play small, and this isn't the fastest of teams. So playing small, I think, they might be able to get away with it in stretches, but it's not a recipe for success long term, and absolutely impacts what this team could do in the NCAA tournament. Before we get into the tournament, I do also want to talk a little bit about USF, because this is a game, I mean, looking back at their game, both their games this week, because they went 0-2 for the week, and USF has not looked good essentially for three quarters, or three halves, I should say. They looked okay in the first half against Gonzaga, and then absolutely crumbled against them in the second half. And then against Santa Clara on Saturday, did not look like themselves. This is a USF team that is unfortunately trending in the wrong direction at the wrong time. Back-to-back losses for, I think it's the first time all year long. I have to take a look at the notes here, but this is, right now, it's not looking good for USF. I thought Marcus Williams had a good first half against Gonzaga. Malik Thomas had a good first half against them as well. But then they disappeared in the second. And I think the other thing was that even though, yeah, he had a solid game, like, Jonathan Mobo was not that player of the year caliber player that we have seen against most everybody else in that game. I mean, Gonzaga ended up winning by 18, and even that was close, that the score was closer than the game actually was. Just going back through that box score, I mean, this is a USF team that does need to figure something out before Vegas. They shot 36% from the field in that second half. They only shot 28% from three against Gonzaga. Against Santa Clara, I mean, they shot 34% from the field. This has not been a good offensive stretch for this team, and this has been one of the more effective offensive teams in the WCC. So there's some work to do here, and at least with the WCC tournament allows you to kind of reset a bit, and they won't play until Saturday, so they have plenty of time. They have a full week to kind of get their minds right, get their game plan right before the WCC tournament. But this USF team looks a bit out of sorts right now, and they need to figure it out before they get to Vegas. Okay, so speaking of Vegas, the WCC tournament does start on Thursday. It does start with the 8-9 game, which will be, that is going to be Pacific and Pepperdine in the opener. Yes, Pepperdine, San Diego, Pepperdine, LMU, and Portland all finished with the same 5-11 record. Portland ended up being the sixth seed with their win over Santa Clara. Each of the three teams had split against each other. So Portland, with their win over Santa Clara, earned them the 6. LMU, with the better net rating than Pepperdine, earned them the 7. And Pepperdine is the 8. So Pacific Pepperdine in the opener, the winner of that game will play San Diego on Friday. LMU Portland, the 6-7 game will also be on Friday. The winner of LMU Portland will get USF. The winner of San Diego Pepperdine and Pacific will get Santa Clara on Saturday. And as we know, the triple byes belong to St. Mary's and Gonzaga. So looking at the WCC tournament as a whole, looking at teams that maybe could surprise or go on a run, I think a team that could surprise is going to be San Diego. And I don't think that's a that's not an outlandish pick. That's not something that I think that's going to shock too many people or surprise too many people, because they have been the team that has oddly played well at times. They have a lot of young pieces. They have Deuce Turner, who can turn it on in any moment. This is a team that is scrappy. This is a team that is young enough to not know what they're in for in the WCC tournament. And I think that plays to their advantage to kind of go in with maybe a level of excitement and lack of expectation going in. Because remember, this was a team that essentially was picked to finish 8th in the conference, and they ended up finishing 5th. So this is a squad that really has nothing to lose and can play really free in Vegas. They get the winner of Pacific Pepperdine. They'll have already played a game, so there's a good chance that they could take that one, and then And if they do win that, they get Santa Clara, who they've already beaten this year. So I think that they kind of have an interesting path to maybe get to the semis. Like, I feel like they are a team that could actually do something on that front. And then maybe a team that could, again, go on a run, if they were to get everything right, if they were to start playing maybe like they were earlier on in the year, is Santa Clara. Because this Santa Clara team has looked lost. And I know, like, injuries have played a factor in that. Adama Ball missed some time. Carlos Marshall has been banged up. Christoph Tilly missed some time. You had a lot of guys on that roster who have missed time. And so they've been mixing and matching lineups, trying to figure out what's going to work best. But they look healthier right now than they have in a long time. They did get that win against USF on Saturday. They did lose to Portland on Thursday, which is concerning. But the Santa Clara team, what we have seen is they are very much capable of beating good teams. They have a win against Gonzaga. They have a win against Washington State. They have a win against Oregon. It's not like that they haven't beaten good teams. It's just they have a hard time putting it all together every so often. And lately it's been more often that they haven't been able to put it together. But with this WCC tournament reset, with the week off, maybe, just maybe, it's this Santa Clara team that could go on a serious run and, hell, maybe win the WCC tournament. And just a few players, like, I'm kind of keeping an eye on, because the players to watch for this tournament, there's so many names that I'm not going to go with, like, it's not the Graham EKs, the Augustus Marshallonises, I'm not going to drop those names, but I feel like there are some other names of guys that you kind of need to keep an eye on, because they could break out or are going to have key moments in this tournament. Deuce Turner is going to be the first one. We just know, like, how dangerous he can be and has been throughout the course of conference play. He has been one of the better offensive weapons for anyone in the WCC, which is if you're San Diego, like that's the one thing you're kind of hanging your hat on is that, hey, this is a guy who can really like take over a game if we need him to. He's had great games even against the likes of St. Mary's. He's had really good games against USF. He's the fourth leading scorer in the WCC at 15.8 a game. In conference, I think it's been even better. I'm just pulling up some of the stats right now. But he has been, second in the conference in scoring since WCC play began. 17.6 per game, just behind Graham Ike at 18.4. He is going to be one of those guys I think you have to keep an eye on. And again, I talked about the San Diego team who could go on a mini run. I think the tournament sets up well for them. And if they do, Deuce Turner is a huge part of them moving forward in Vegas. Nolan Hickman is another one. And maybe this is slightly obvious, but Nolan Hickman has the opportunity to it feels like this is an opportunity for him to actually have a breakout tournament and really start to show like his full capabilities in Vegas. Like it feels like this is could be his coming out party of sorts where we start to see him display all the tools on a grander stage. We saw him with the 7 assists against St. Mary's. We saw him with 22 points against USF on Thursday. He has been playing so well over the last month and a half and just getting better and better and finding different ways to contribute that now he has become an invaluable piece where a year ago we were talking about how he was the liability. He is now the X factor for Gonzaga. When he is playing well, when he is on top of his game, Gonzaga becomes so difficult to beat because he adds that extra element for this squad, and you can no longer leave him alone anywhere on the floor. Another one I'm going to throw out there is Luke Barrett. Luke Barrett had his ups and downs all season long. Like he's had some great games. He's been WCC Player of the Week at one point. And then there are games in which he's just not needed all that much, but he's going to be needed this week in the WCC tournament. With the lack of depth that St. Mary's has right now, he becomes that much more important for their success. He needs to play well. He needs to shoot it well. And to an extent, like I think we saw a little bit of it on Saturday against the Zags, is that he second-guessed himself a couple of times when maybe he should have just pulled the trigger on a couple of three-pointers that just didn't fall for him. So I think that's something that he needs. And I don't think Luke Barrett lacks for confidence. I think he just – it was one of those moments where he second-guessed himself a couple of times. But I don't expect that to carry over into Vegas. I think we'll see the good Luke Barrett we have seen over the course of the season. A guy who, as I'm thinking about it a little bit more, could very well end up being the WCC sixth man of the year. He's only had one start, so I think that, and he's been one of the better offensive weapons off the bench for anyone in the WCC. And then another one that I think you have to keep an eye on it and is going to be critical for Santa Clara's success in this tournament is Johnny O'Neill. We know that what Carlos Marshall brings, we know what Adama Ball brings and what they have to do if Santa Clara is going to make a run. But the other guy who has to really come through is going to be Johnny O'Neill. He is the guy who's going to have to be able to stretch the floor for this team, open up the middle of the paint for the Christoph Tillies. He's also going to be a guy like you have on both ends of the floor that needs to play well, I think, for Santa Clara to have a shot. We know how dangerous he is from three-point range. We know that he can also play inside, outside. He's going to be a critical component for this tournament. I could very well I could very easily see him being one of the guys who has a great tournament, maybe even ends up on a on the all tournament team once we're all set and ready to go. All right, so going into the tournament, going to go over, maybe I'm just going to kind of rattle through. I did this last week on like predicting who I think the award winners are, and I'm going to do it just kind of one last time, run through the gauntlet, because I now that we're done with the regular season, I think it's very clear, much more clear who all the award winners should be. And I mentioned it earlier, Grammy Case Player of the Year, I think that's kind of like set in stone at this point. This past week, the 20, what is it, against St. Mary's, he had 24-10. Against USF, it was 26-7. I think it's very clear that it's Graham EK at this point. Anyone who's voting not Graham EK, I think, has not been watching much WCC basketball this year, or at least not watching Gonzaga at all. The coach of the year, I think, is pretty obvious. It's Randy Bennett, 15-1, best record in St. Mary's history within conference play, and ends up being the outright champion. When you think about where they started to where they are now, I think it's been a huge lift, a huge task to see where they are today versus where they were mid-November, early December. Amazing turnaround. So yeah, Randy Bennett would be my coach of the year. Sixth man, did mention it just a little bit. Luke Barrett now makes more sense than Ben Gregg. And it's largely because of the number of starts that Ben Gregg has had at this point. And I know Tommy Cousy a couple years ago won sixth man of the year, even though he also had a lot of starts on under his belt. So Ben Gregg wins it. Like, I won't be shocked. He was my pick a week ago. But the more I thought about it, the more I was talking with people, like, Luke Barrett does make a lot of sense because he has been that sixth man all year long. And so I'm going to lean Luke Barrett here. But if Ben Gregg does still claim that award, it wouldn't surprise me, and I would not be upset by that. Defensive Player of the Year. I'm still set on this one. I don't think I'm moving off of it, that it's Jonathan Mobo. From beginning to end, he has been one of the better defenders in the league. The best defender in the league. Like, you can look at just all of his numbers. He's the leading rebounder in the conference. He's there on the he's in the conversation in blocks and steals. He's a guy that I feel like that has been that anchor for USF. That what USF's success largely has been this year has been through him. And he has been kind of like their Mr. Do-It-All for USF. He's done a little bit of everything. He's been their best rebounder. He's been at times their best scorer. He's been their best passer. He's been their best on the break. Like, it's like he has been kind of Mr. Everything for USF. I think Jonathan Mobo is the Defensive Player of the Year. Anton Watson, I think, is obviously going to be in that conversation as well. And I don't think it'd be hard to kind of remove him from that, because of just the career that he has had. And if it ends up being Anton Watson this year, I would not kind of scoff at that, because that still makes a lot of sense. That still, he has been the anchor of a defense that has also been very, very good this year. This is still a top 50 defense in the country. So let's not ignore that Gonzaga hasn't been that good defensively, because they have. And they've honestly like been more reliant on that defense over the course of the season than they had been even on their offense, which obviously has turned it up three notches in the last few weeks. And I'm trying to think, am I missing an award? I don't think I am. I did Player of the Year. We did Player of the Year. Let's see. Yeah, I think we got, I think I covered all the awards, and then the WCC all conference team, the 10-man first team of the WCC, which yes, like I know that conversation is going to come up all week long because it's like, why are there 10 on a first team and all that sort of stuff, but kind of is where we are. If I'm just going to go through and think about who those 10 are, immediately I got to go Graham EK, got to go Ryan Nemhard, got to include Anton Watson on that team. So there's three Zags already. I have to go with Augustus Marshallonis this time around. That gives me four. I think Mitchell Saxon has to be there. That's five. Jonathan Mobo would make six. This is where it gets a little tricky. It's not that there aren't guys that are deserving. It's like, okay, who else deserves to be on that? I think Michael Ajayi should be on that team from Pepperdine. He's been the leading overall leading scorer in the conference all season long. That's eight. Looking throughout the rest of the teams, I think you're going to be able to make a case for. So now that I only have two spots left, maybe it's you can make the case for Nolan Hickman. Maybe you throw in Adama Ball. Maybe it's Carlos Marshall Jr. Like Deuce Turner, I think you can make a solid case for as well. And just thinking through this, you know what? I think that's what I'm gonna go with. I think Deuce Turner, you have to give credits to San Diego and where they are right now and what they've been able to do. And over the course of the whole season, I think Adama Ball has to be that 10th. Nolan Hickman somehow does not make the cut of this, at least in my mind. It's not that I don't think he's deserving of being in here. I think it's just that when I think about the totality of the season, we have seen some really great performances from guys who have been the leaders of their team. But if I swap out, an Adama Ball for Nolan Hickman, that would work for me too. I don't think that there's enough of a difference between those two that kind of moves that. Like I would accept either one of them in there. And yeah, that would give us four Zags in the starting in that top 10. But the Zags have been so reliant upon that starting five this year. So it's hard to not try to put almost all of them in that top 10. All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Unofficial WCC Hoops Podcast. Be sure to hit the subscribe button, like on your favorite streaming services, follow on social media at Posts by Zach, and also for the podcast on Twitter, UnoffWCCPod. And we'll end up putting out a few more episodes throughout the course of the week. We'll try to get something. We will be live in Vegas at a certain point, so check out. I will be getting there on Sunday, so starting at that point, start looking out for content from Las Vegas and the WCC tournament, and we'll try to get some people on and do all that fun stuff. All right. So once again, thanks for listening. Have a great week, everybody. The WCC tournament is here. Vegas is here. And I will catch you next time.